So let's have a look, quick look at what are the four indicators of rapport, because there are four things for us to know when we're in rapport with somebody. And you may see one or a number of these things. The first thing is an internal feeling. You just get a feeling that you're in rapport. Was that similar to you with the breathing, sir? Yep, absolutely. So at that point, you just knew. There was a feeling of knowing, a feeling of closeness, a feeling of connection. You probably feel it right here somewhere, you know, in the stomach or the solar plexus area. Just that inner feeling of, like, you know, a feeling connected. So that's one thing, may have an internal feeling. The second thing that might happen is you might have a colour change, both in you and the other person. As in, the face seems to have a more of a blush to it, almost. The colour comes up in the person. And that's an indication of warmth, because it's a warmness returning. What may also happen is they may say something to you, as in, oh, do I know you? If I met you before, you look really familiar. Maybe you just got one of those faces. Are you sure I don't know? It seems like I've known you for ages. I feel really comfortable with you. What's really going on there is the conscious mind is trying to rationalize why they like you so much, or why you like them so much. Because normally it takes you a long time to like someone. So suddenly when you hit upon rapport with someone, you have their instant connection with that person, your unconscious mind is going, I don't get this. It must be because I know them, or it must be because some other reason. But what's happened is you just instantly have rapport, because either by chance you've matched and mirrored each other, or maybe the other person knew how to match and mirror with you and they were doing it automatically, and you feel really connected with that person. How many people have done that before? Met someone you didn't know and you instantly hit it off? How many people have had an experience like that? So as you think about that experience now, what was it about that person that was the same as that gave that rapport? What was it? So that was, again, your conscious mind trying to ration it away. I must know them from a past life. Absolutely, yeah, that can happen. What else? What was your experience? Just describe it to me. Your experience that you had by just knowing this person suddenly. What was it? Just felt comfortable with them. Yeah, absolutely. And so as you think about it, was that person like you? Was it, or at least your perception that they were like you, as in you shared the same values, same beliefs, same vision, or you spoke maybe in a similar way, for example, or maybe that you somehow you had the same physiology, you dressed the same, or you held yourself the same, or you had the same, something about you was same, right? Humor may have been same, absolutely. So what you're really seeking to do then is to actually bring that thing that happened by chance, happening every single time, into all of your work you do with everyone. And of course, this isn't just applying to NLP, you know, when you're doing interventions with people, but clearly at any time you're out there and you want to be building rapport with someone, this is a great skill to have now. And people won't know that you're doing it unless you get into another NLP practitioner, for example. But here's the interesting thing, because we're so conditioned to focus on our own content, even NLP practitioner me out there will forget about rapport completely. And they won't even know that you're doing it consciously. There's so much else going on for us, 7 plus or minus 2 things only at one time, they'll delete it. They won't even notice it. Unconsciously, they'll like you and they'll get into it, but they won't know what you're doing. So if you have any worries about creating rapport with people and being found out, it won't happen. Unless you're, like, really obvious with it. One other aspect of knowing when we have rapport is this thing called leading. And what we say in NLP is pace, 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 lead. As in, you pace the other person, as in you're matching and mirroring and matching and mirroring. Think about a pacemaker in like a race. Is like they're running, aren't they? Keeping that pace with you. They're keeping the pace. They're keeping the same pace as you the whole time. Why would you want to lead them, by the way? For what purpose other than that would you want to lead them? Yeah, to move them, absolutely. Because once you've got rapport, if you then lead them, you might want to lead them in a direction that's either more comfortable for you in a conversation, for example, or you might want to lead them because you want to lead them towards the result or an outcome you want for them. Okay? Good. So crossover mirroring specifically, you don't have to always use that. You use it specifically when there's, as we said with Karen earlier, if you don't want to exactly match the exact physiology of the other person, but you want to stay in rapport with them. So let's say, for example, they're doing depression. Now, clearly, you know, both of you getting into the well and being depressed probably isn't going to be very useful for you, but you want to match certain things. So you may want to match certain things with them. So you may want to not want to go down like this and breathe like... So you may just decide, for example, that what you'll do is that you may, for example, turn your head at the same time they breathe. Or you may move your hand at the same time they breathe. Or it may be that rather than lie down like that, for example, maybe you move an area of your foot, for example, so it's the same as theirs, for example. So you're matching every single thing. You may match different things with your body against their body. Often the best one often is tapping at the same rhythm that they're breathing out. Or it could be the rhythm that they're blinking at, for example. It could be a whole multitude of things. So just play with those things to see what works. Okay, good. So let's move on to the second part of our rapport, which is we're now going to move on to the other section, which is our 38%, which is our voice tonalities. Now, when we think about voice tonalities, if you think about it, if you take the physiology part out, which you would do, for example, if you're on the telephone, and some of you may be doing phone coaching, for example, with people, maybe something you end up doing, or just business phone calls, for example, you don't have the physiology. So therefore, when you have just the tonality and just the words, basically tonality becomes 84% important, and the words become 16% important when you take out physiology. So it's still very, very big and very important. And for me specifically, because I'm quite auditory, tonality is very more important to me than it would be to someone, for example, who is more kinesthetic, who'd be into physiology. So these are not these are not definitives, for example. It depends on rep systems, what's more important. For example, someone who's AD will be more into words. But you do find there are a lot less AD people in the world than there are, for example, kinesthetic people and auditory. How many people would consider themselves to be AD? Raise your hand if you consider yourself to AD. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people. Good. Okay. How many people would consider themselves to be visual, for example? Raise your hand if you're visual. Good. That makes sense. Okay. Most of you. And then auditory. How many people? Yeah, so quite a low number of auditory, that's quite often. And how many people kinesthetic, would you say? How many people are kinesthetic? Great. So AD is probably the lowest one of those. It's not always the case, but most AD, for example, is less than. So let's have a look at the words now and how we create that. So what are some of the things that we can match and mirror with voice tone, voice cues or voice tonalities? What are some of the things we can match and mirror there? Say again. Pitch, yes, okay, so high or low frequency of voice. Some people speak with a very high pitch of voice, for example. Some speak quite low down. Volume, yes, absolutely. Some people speak very, very loud. And then some people speak very softly with their voice. Yeah, good. What else? Speed, yes, absolutely. It's a big one. So some people speak very, very fast without leaving any gaps or pauses or sentences with everything they say. They keep going as fast as they can without ever stopping to take a breath. And those people really wear you out when they keep speaking like that. And then there are those people who pause a long time between the words. And other people fill in the gaps, you see. Because they get so bored waiting. So there are lots of things we can match. But the other one would be the voice timbre or the quality of the voice. Timbre. So voice characteristics. So some people speak with a very clear pronunciation of voice, very clear English, for example. Other people speak with a really gruff voice, for example. They have a like resonancy to the voice and that kind of stuff. So the qualities of the voice specifically, you can match and mirror as well. Accents, good question. Now the thing about accents is they're one of the only things I would not tell you to match and mirror. Because like even if you think you're good at matching and mirroring an accent, you probably aren't. Accents are really interesting, I think, because they are a true indicator, I think, of how we do create rapport and how we do create likeness. Because if you live in a certain part of the country where everyone speaks that way and you go and move to that area of the country and stay there long enough, what happens? You end up speaking the same way as them. My my auntie, actually, who lived for many years down here in London, and she was a real sort of Cockney London. She then, when she got married, she lived up in Yorkshire, and I didn't see her for ages, and she came back, and she was speaking like, all right, Chuck, and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, what's going on? It's really weird. Because she used to speak this real kind of London accent, but now she's been living for a number of years. She's changed, she's altered. Anybody else have an experience of that, of living in a different place and changing your language? Mancunian, right, there you go. I knew someone would say that. So we've said volume, voice quality, timbre, tempo, tonality, and also, very importantly, the origins of the voice. If you focus on the origin of where the voice comes from, normally that's like the driver for you, and that will help you to put it in the right place. So some people speak from high up in the throat, for example, and then what would the voice tend to speak like if it's up here? High-pitched, squeaky kind of voice, because there's less oxygen in there, for example. And if it's down here, for example, it'll have a bit more of a resonancy. So here it's very squeaky, for example, and it's like high up and fast-paced, for example, because they've got to speak very fast. And as soon as it comes down here, it's a more chest, it's got a bit more rhythm to the voice, for example, it has more flow to it. And then sometimes, if I'm speaking from down here, then there's a much more deeper voice resonancy. And I'll use my voice at various times in the seminar to create, elicit certain states in the audience. That's what I'm doing day to day, moment to moment. And so you want to be doing the same thing. I'm going to give you some big tips, really, on when we start tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow we're doing it, on how to make all this stuff much easier. But basically, for now, just holding in mind that if you're a visual person, you have a certain set of things that go with that. If you're auditory, you'll have a certain things that go with that. If you're kinesthetic, you have a whole set of characteristics that go with that. So if you think to a person, oh, this person's visual, what you do is just put yourself into a visual state and everything will get switched on for you. It makes it really easy. Because visual, what happens is, if you're visual, what will happen is you'll be speaking with your hands quite a lot, probably. You're speaking very fast, uptime, fast-paced, for example. You're moving fast, you're creating pictures in your mind, all that kind of stuff. Whereas if you're more kinesthetic, for example, you're probably turned on the side. The person has a bit more rhythm to the voice, for example. The breathing is more here. So once you put these things in the right place, everything else seems to flow easily for you. So you don't have to go like, oh, what's this doing? What's that doing? And pick and match all over the place. You just take a big chunk and go visual, auditory, kinesthetic. It makes it much easier for you, okay?